Welcome to Rebecca Neal, the podcast, where I, Rebecca, your host, share thought-provoking episodes with you to help you take your life from where it is now to where you want it to be. I have a huge desire and passion to help people just like you get out of their own way and start living the life that they deserve. I'm here to help you feel empowered, educated, and inspired to get into massive action and create change in your life today. Join me weekly as I share insights into the online business world, social media, and many other motivational topics, and also interview some of the world's most incredible humans to help you become the best version of yourself.
Pumping through your body makes you pretty sketchy. And when you haven't, you know, further in my career, you learn to control that. But at the beginning, you know, you're pretty fresh into this stuff.
And you're excited and you want it to be like...
Exactly, and you want it so much and it means so much. And when we put so much weight to it, right, it has an even crazier effect on the body. Whether you're aware of it or not comes with experience. Once you're aware of it, then you can start to control it through breathing practices and facials and situation awareness, sure. But back then, you don't have these tools. So your body's just pumping full of cortisol and adrenaline and you're trying to deal with it. So you get off the bus or you get off the... You know, the multiple buses and guys line all their kit out. They want to kit check you.
Welcome back to Rebecca Neal, the podcast. Today's guest is Scott Evanett, and he has dedicated his life to human development. So I'm really excited to have him on the show. Spending the first 18 years navigating a broad range of sports such as competitive gymnastics, national level surf lifesaving, motocross racing, little athletics, and professional soccer. At the age of 16, Scott left Australia to pursue his professional soccer career in the UK, travelling the country solo until successfully being selected for teams in both Wales and England. Determined to continue the pursuit of self-mastery and human development, Scott decided to return home to start from the bottom once again, this time with his sights set on Australian Defence Force, specifically Australian Commandos. Scott served with the Australian Defence Force from January 2005 until October 2012. After leaving the military in 2012, Scott set out establishing his fitness, high performance and mental development business ventures. The Commando Tough Training Facility and military-styled selection events were awarded Local Business of the Year within the first 12 months of operation. Scott has also created a seven-figure online business as a master coach and mentoring, devoting his time to step-by-step warrior development online courses and programs, helping others achieve mind and body transformations globally. Every day, Scott continues to motivate and inspire others by sharing his mindset and positive energy via social media, maintaining his mental and physical fitness standards at the highest level continuously as an example whilst also supporting the veteran community. Hello and welcome to Rebecca Neal, the podcast. Scotty.
Hello, Rebecca. It's awesome to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm actually really excited to have you on the show because not only are you my amazing partner, but you are such an incredible human that I can't wait to share with my audience.
Oh, thank you very much.
So I'm going to start my podcast how I always start it when I interview amazing humans, and we want to know, how do you have your coffee? Because I know when we first met, you told me you had it five different ways, and I thought, what am I in for?
That is amazing. I love this question straight up. Okay, so the answer that I gave you was I'm very purposeful, right? Every single environment that I set up has a purpose to it. So in the morning, I would love to have a bulletproof coffee. I think that's the most awesome start to the day for me. It aligns with my nutrition plan, my body, aesthetics, everything that I'm aiming for. However, if I'm sitting at the cafe working on some work, little espressos are good to go. If I've got a long haul in, so I'm doing some programming with post-production, some videos, a filtered coffee, which lasts a lot longer. So every single time I have a different coffee for a different reason. And I think a lot of people do, unfortunately. They go by feeling a lot of the time. So when it hits winter, they want to hit the milkies. They want to hit the big, large, extra larges. I try and stay to the plan. That's me.
Well, I still drink cold coffee all year round, so it's definitely weird for some people.
You're a tough cookie.
So tell me, how do you spend the first hour of your day? Because I think, you know, how we spend the first hour of our day or the first few hours of our day is so important for our mind and everything we want to achieve in life. And I think someone like you is going to have a pretty epic morning routine.
Totally. And it's been different. So let's get into that because, you know, when you're very focused on self-development or you're coming from a position of, you know, heightened self-awareness, you know what sort of mental state you're in. And if you're in a mental state that you've, you know, acknowledged that could be better, I tend to have a tighter morning routine where I want to tap into the warrior, tap into the toughness, because I know I need it. I don't want to follow down a rabbit hole or a path that leads me to a negative or a slow start to the day. We all know what it feels like to sleep in and then just regret that, and then everything follows suit, right? You feel like you're just late all day long, you've missed things and you haven't hit it to the standards that you want to. So the morning routine for me has changed since meeting you, right? Because priority-wise, oh, still got me?
Yeah,
just cut out there for a second, sorry. Priority-wise, we've been able to achieve getting up early naturally, which I think is very important. So I'm definitely an early riser, but we've been able to, you know, spend time together whilst – hang on, there's something going on here. Okay. You can hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you still recording?
Yeah. Yeah, still recording.
Blooper.
Blooper. I'll just exit that out. Okay, so the morning routine is super important, and it's changed since meeting you. But primarily getting up and getting my mind primed to attack the day and getting into an early start is the thing I want to do. So counting backwards from five. So as soon as the alarm goes up or I naturally wake up, I do like to count back from five. And before I get to one, my feet hit the ground. All right, that just stops procrastination. It also gives me something to act upon on my plan the night before. So if you have a plan the night before and you start acting into the morning, you find momentum faster.
That way you leave your shoes next to
exactly. If you leave shoes, if you leave your fitness equipment, if you establish preparing yourself the night before, then you can hook into it immediately. You don't have to come up with a plan in the morning. And because our minds go to 80 to 90% of the thoughts we had the day before, it's the perfect opportunity to ensure that we're in control. We're on the attack. So if we're in the defensive mode, we're also prone to emotions and we're prone to negative thought patterns. So I want to avoid that. And coming out of the military, I've had to have super strong weapons. I've had to weaponize my mentality to stay away from, you know, PTSD type effects. You know, depression and anxiety can be quite strong. So you want to have these weaponized thought patterns, systems, you know, the science behind it, so you can keep attacking on a positive mentality and be your best self. I've still got huge goals and I need to make sure that I'm on the best platform.
Yeah, for sure. And it's that responsive, not reactive for the rest of the day if you're doing that right.
Totally, totally. And to finish off your question, counting backwards from five, getting the feet on the ground, usually I'll put, you know, a bit of an audible on at that point there. So just straight into some music or motivation on Spotify or YouTube. And again, that's just that audible action-taking ability to say that, hey, man, you got this. It's to the plan. Keep going. From there, I usually go into a set of push-ups, sit-ups, squats. Again, something to the plan, whatever I'm achieving for my body aesthetics, what we do repetitively is what we end up getting out of it result-wise. And then that warms my body temp up slightly just to get into an ice bath or get into some cold water therapy, shower, whatever I can. So that's pretty much the ultimate start to the day. From there, it's into that bulletproof coffee. The music's still playing. The motivation's still there, and I feel pretty bulletproof after that anyway.
Yeah, and you know what? It's you see people online doing their thing. Social media is one of those places that not always represents the truth. And I think what I love and admire about you is you truly do live what you put out there. And I've seen it firsthand how you get up and how you do the things, and you never miss a morning, and you've got me doing my squats and all the things that I need to do.
Totally.
So it's pretty awesome to see that you are living the mission that you're putting out there.
And I do find it hard because, you know, one side of me is, and I love being disciplined and I love the toughness that comes with it, because I think we need to have a hard mentality. I think we need to be able to tap into it anyway. You know, you don't have to live it totally. But what's hard is communicating that across with energy and purpose without offending people. You know, some people need it, and there's different times that we need it. And communicating with you has been one of those things, right? Like, I'm not going to be a sergeant in the house, get down, you know, yelling and giving you all of that. However, there's definitely a way that we can communicate that where it's beneficial to do these things, you know. Don't see it as an ego, you v me type mentality, but let's do this together. And super important to communicate that to anybody to get them the momentum that they're looking for anyway.
Yeah, I think you're highly encouraging and inspiring. It's not like you're drilling me like a sergeant.
No, I try not to, but it's there if
yes.
You need it.
Oh, I've heard it come out a few times. That's for another episode.
There's a hard stick there. I do have a line. There's a line. If you hear that softness, you've got to put your foot down.
So I want to dive into where it all started, because I think it's really cool to hear people's journeys and stories. You know, you've played representative football to the special forces. You've had this amazing fitness, motivational, inspirational background. You've been on some amazing TV shows. Why the passion and interest in human development? You know, let's dive into who Scott is and the driving force behind what you do and why you do it.
Okay, so I truly believe, you know, what we're made up of, you know, from what we're born with, from our parents, you know, from our ancestors, you know, there's a big part of our genetics that come into play. And, you know, just a snapshot of that, you know, my father is an amazing, he has an amazing mind around mechanics, you know, engineering and, you know, pulling things apart and putting things together. And his aptitude around that is amazing. And his dad before him and so on and so forth. And I believe I have the same makeup there. It's just that mine hasn't been around the tools as such. You know, I pick up those things. I've built motorbikes and cars with him, and that's not a problem either. But I've spent most of my time performing in and outside of the body, using the body as the vehicle to learn. So having the same mentality. Oh, can you hear that? It's a nice vacuum outside. We can work past that, don't worry. Small thread out
at
the back.
Home with Scotty and Beck.
So, yeah, I believe that plays a huge part into who we are and what we, you know, we find our strengths, right? But for me, athletically too, I had no problem. My father played for North Sydney Bears. Mum was big into her tennis and netball. We have national level netballers in our side, you know, in our team. Team side, family, let's just call it that. They're all the same thing, right? And I believe, you know, I didn't have any issues picking up that naturally. So that's why I diversified across so many sports, because my parents are very positive and encouraging for that. So I was able to, you know, building motorbikes with dad, you know, encouraged to go and race them, you know, doing nippers as a little one, you know, and getting that social aspect in from my parents, taking that to a national level, like competing, right? Gymnastics was the same, taking, you know, competitive gymnastics at the highest level. I think naturally I found my way into a lot of sports just because I was good at them, but I was also passionate to figure out what we could do. And then it's in hindsight that you look back and see that shit, gymnastics just crossed over into so many sports, you know, that core development, you know, and having the healthy joints and flexibility and mobility that came from that as a young, only looking at it in hindsight, at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I'm not thinking about these things, but naturally they helped me progress in other sports. And then just coming to that fork in the road, it was like, what sport do you want to do full time? You know, and soccer and English Premier League and all these things that we're watching on TV, that was the level that I wanted to aspire to. So ended up picking that.
That's very
cool. Yeah.
So then you went from that into what you did with the special forces.
Yeah, yeah. So, do you want to hit on soccer for a little bit? Like, as in, I guess my mentality is, as you and me have found out, we share the same mentality where we go at it quite fast, right? We go at things with purpose. Like, we know what we want, and there's nothing that can slow us down, right? And it was the same mentality with football, and my parents encouraged it, was leaving school at year 10. I got my high school certificate and then had a full-time soccer coach. And with that full-time soccer coach allowed me to train every single day, you know, play with the team, play sports for multiple teams, and then use those skills and the network just to go at it and get overseas at 16. If I wanted to play at that level, the longer I stayed in Australia, you know, the further behind these other kids that were in a better environment for that were getting ahead of me. So, yeah, it was a teary goodbye at the airport from my parents. I was only 16. I remember my big black bag that I was carrying and had a big orange sticker on it that said, you know, heavy, 52 kilos, right? 52
wow.
Kilo, big black bag on wheels. I remember the cobblestones in England and me dragging this thing into the tube. And it was a really, you know, that developed me so much as a youngster, pretty much backpacking around England, looking for a team to play, staying on couches, you know, getting in with my boots on, just playing the game, coach would invite me back, where's next? And, you know, finally I got a run over in Wales, which is where my career started, really, over there.
And so then when, you know, why do you do what you do now? Like, where does that fall into things? You've obviously been passionate about fitness your whole life, but what's the passion behind human development, like, you know, helping people achieve their greatest level?
Totally. I mean, have you found that, you know, one thing leads you to the next and to the next, and without one, you wouldn't get the other. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Funny that, right? So without my soccer career, or without the diverse sporting background to help me, like the gymnastics into the soccer, helped me be a better football player, right? And then the football and that life experience more than anything got me through the door into what was called the Special Forces Recruiting Scheme, because they were testing to see if they could get more successful candidates from a sporting background. So without my soccer career, not only soccer career, but without, you know, risking as a 16-year-old and my parents letting me go and traveling around and getting that life experience on, they would not have let me in. That was the biggest question. It's what I have to go through with my guys that I developed to go in now, is I say, well, how much life experience have you got? Right? Because the military are really looking for that, especially at the highest level, especially when they want brain development, right? And they're looking for an aptitude that you can't read about, can't just find online. You have to have life experience, right? So without the soccer and without the life experience of traveling, I wouldn't have been accepted as an 18-year-old to turn 19 on the commando selection course and get in the first place. So one thing has to lead to another, and that's that addictive progress in human development, right? Mm-hmm. On every single level. It's like without this step Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, I couldn't get the other ones, right? But without the, you know, bypassing fear factor and getting into it and getting experience done, you find you sit still.
Yeah, and it's funny, like everything in life, when you look back in hindsight, all links together, like even our relationship, like we won't go into that too much today, but it's amazing how everything just lines up so perfectly when you look back and you track it all.
It's crazy. And human development in specifics. So the breathing patterns and fast twitch muscle fibers that come from soccer training, right? In hindsight, I can see exactly what the training was, how I was able to have faster feet, quicker reflexes, soft touch with the ball, extreme fitness, which led me into, you know, and then gymnastics, right? In gymnastics, when you're competing in gymnastics, they're also looking at your facial expressions. They're looking to see if you've got the moves on the rings with ease, or are you struggling? Mm-hmm. Because if you look like you're struggling, you look weaker, or your position is weaker and you get less points. They hold up those scorecards and they're low. So the coaches are always tapping your leg when you're, you know, holding a simple L-sit or doing whatever, and you have to make it look like you've got that all day. But again, it's just that in hindsight, you can pick all these little crumbs up and be like, those breathing techniques and those movement patterns and those facial expressions and those thought patterns, these are all the things that actually get human performance as far as movement's concerned done at a really, really high standard. So putting all that together, I found myself even in a coaching position inside of the commando unit teaching these things so our soldiers were better soldiers.
And didn't you tell me that you outdid the beep test? That has something to do with soccer.
Yeah, definitely. So I was, I was a whippet. I was, young and light when I joined the military. I was 60 to 62 kilos.
That's crazy.
Man, that is a little fella.
What are you weighing in about now to give 85. People context?
85. I did step out of the military at about 90 after my last tour, getting in some good gym time and food overseas. I'm on that last tour that I had, but. From 60 to 62 kilos to 90 kilos over an 8-year period, eating in the mess, training like a madman.
Amazing. So after I've heard some amazing stories, and we were talking about some last night, it's pretty incredible. It's no wonder that people love this SAS TV show, right?
Totally.
So what is it like being, you know, part of a very select number of people who get to be chosen to be part of the Special Forces? You know, can you take us through some of the selection criteria or some of the things that you've experienced and seen that others would have no idea about, right?
Definitely. I mean, it's an honor, right? It's an honor to have made into a unit like that. It's held in high regard, SAS, commandos, those tier one operators, rubbing shoulders with them and working up the ranks with those guys. It's an absolute honor to get there, but you have to work your ass off to get there. I think, you know, Australians and Special Forces, the journey is one of the longest, you know, around. Like, we have to spend a very long time in training, and our selection processes and things go for a long time to actually make it into that standard. And even getting through the threshold of commando selection, you only just enter the gate. And then you have this thing called a reinforcement cycle, which is, as long as your leg list of qualifications that you have to get the Green Beret, and you're being tested the entire time. So it starts when you first enlist. They want to test, I said, they test your aptitude. Without the brain, right, they're not going to send you in anyway. And sometimes it's not even that. It's just the experience that you've had, your life experience, right? So how quick you can solve problems and everything, sure, but where's your emotional response to things? You know, where's your problem-solving ability with those emotions intact? And that doesn't come from reading have to have had fear factor and flight and fight mode, you know, activated as a little one just to figure out, oh, I can manage this. I've been through situations worse, perhaps overseas by myself, for example. So you have to get through barriers first, physically, mentally, before you're even into the military. And then you do Kapuka, which is your basic training. You do infantry training, advanced infantry training. So there's just training on training on training, which you're under the eye the entire time. And physically, mentally, and they're also looking for teamwork. They're looking for leadership. They're looking for every other skill set in a soldier that makes you a top soldier, not just a regular soldier. And then you go through your commando selection course. And for me, that was around 30 days.
Yeah, so what can you tell us a little bit about what that entails?
Yeah, absolutely. So back on that, it was, you know, a individual phase to begin with, right? So as soon as you turn up, you know, you're laying out your kit. You know, the stress levels and anxiety and, you know, the amount of adrenaline pumping through your body makes you pretty sketchy. And when you haven't, you know, further in my career, you learn to control that. But at the beginning, you know, you're pretty fresh into this stuff.
And you're excited and you want it to be like.
Exactly. And you want it so much and it means so much. And when we put so much weight to it, right, it has an even crazier effect on the body. Whether you're aware of it or not, comes with experience. Once you're aware of it, then you can start to control it through breathing practices and facials and situational awareness, sure. But back then, you don't have these tools. So your body's just pumping full of cortisol and adrenaline and you're trying to deal with it. So you get off the bus or you get off the, you know, the multiple buses and guys line all their kit out. They want to kit check you straight away. You know, you put all your stuff out on your hoochie, which is like a waterproof, you know, cover. And they're testing to see if you brought everything and you follow the instructions, you know, on this huge list of equipment that you had to bring. And it starts there. And if you don't have anything, if any one of the 180 candidates standing there doesn't have anything, you are getting hammered, right? So there's instructors flying in and out throughout the lines, you know, looking for bits and pieces. Are you holding up the right colored kit? It said black and you brought brown, or you brought black and it had a brown stripe on it and that's not full. You're like, you are into it from day one. And it flows into an individual phase, which is very physically testing. So they just have to ensure that, you know, that first phase, if you're not physically there, mentally there to hold up your body and get past in performance, then you're pretty much X'd out straight away. So that's like a 3.2K run with your webbing and rifle. You've got push-ups, you've got pull-ups, you've got sit-ups, so a whole range of different body weight exercises. You've got swimming, in pack marching, you know, navigation, all of this. If you don't pass that as an individual, as you asked me last night, are you out there by yourself and you do nav? Like, yeah, you're completely
tell us
solo.
A little bit about that story because it's pretty good.
You're completely solo. So the story I think you just, you know, you alluded to was, you know, on my second selection, I failed my 20 clicker, right? So that means I came in about 4 to 5 minutes late. I was dehydrated. I had some rehydration salts. It had a cramping effect on my stomach. I was trying to throw up as I was getting along and I came in late. What that means is that you have an opportunity to retest that particular thing on that selection. However, they don't stop the pattern or the, you know, the setup of the selection course. That means they have to slide it in between, right? Which, so you've done your 20 clicker, you move on to the navigational part, which is covering as many kilometers and checkpoints within those kilometers as you can by day and by night. So it's a nonstop activity of walking across, finding these checkpoints, radioing in, moving to the next one by day, by night. And you know, you know roughly how many you have to get, or you would definitely know that you're falling behind if you've been lost, for example, or you can't find the specific checkpoint, you can't radio in.
Say that was 90 kilometers.
Yeah, it was about 90. Yeah, you can follow.
Don't forget these details because they're pretty hectic.
So you've done a 20 clicker, you've done your run, then you do a full, you know, further anything from, you know, 70, 90 Ks, whatever you're covering over the two to three day period. And then you've got to do it again. And that was my experience is after this navigational exercise, I had two toenails left. So I'd walked the other ones off. They'd fallen off. I'd used Condi's crystals, right, which was a, where you dunk your feet in for months before selection to harden them up in hopes that they don't blister, right? But what that had done is sort of calcified my heels into one solid chunk. So when they came off, they really came off, right? So I had missing heels, I had missing toenails, and I had huge chafe where I had to tape my cam pants to my legs because they were just rubbing to the point of bleeding, and I just went enough and I just got out my strapping tape and I taped them to the leg. So I came back, you know,
really attractive.
Oh yeah, super attractive, beaten up, torn up, whatever. And you know, that's the NAVEX done. So everyone moves on as per the, you know, the former of the course. Not for me. No, this was like tap, 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 you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. Those boys who need to retest, let's retest, right? Into the back of the truck. You know, five of us get in the back of the truck, three get back out, two just say, can't do it. You know, it's too much. And then out of the three of us, whatever, I was the only one that sort of got through at that point there and, you know, ran pretty much the best time of my life. I don't remember half of it. Just remember disappearing into my breathing and disappearing. Because at that point there, if I'd have failed that specific march, I was out. You know, and second time around, because I tore my thigh on the first selection course, that was it. If I missed this, that was my, you know, I joined for the special forces specifically. You know, I didn't want to do regular army. I wanted specifically special forces. So this, I just had to disappear into my breathing, block every single thing out and go into a trance essentially with movement, with whatever that pace was up and down hills, whatever that pace was on the flats that matched that breathing and just disappear. And I ended up crossing in a cracking time. Straight into a high five pretty much from one guy that said, congratulations, drop your pack, you've got PT, let's go.
You made it.
That's it. I got into the next part and the story after that, you know, fast. Yeah. 174 started and 15 finished.
Amazing. Very cool. And then you go on to do all these other incredible things.
And there's more and more and
many
more.
Stories to come.
Many.
And I think, you know, you explained there like how you use your breathing as a technique to, I guess, disappear from reality, let's call it.
Yep.
Is that the way you do that? Like, how do you go to that space? Or is it something that's just there because you're in that moment, or you think you've trained yourself to be that way?
I've definitely trained myself to do that during my soccer career, right? So, you know, finding a, you know, inhale, exhale, double inhale, exhale breath when you're hitting cones and fast feet, if you stick to the breath, you know, as you can imagine, I won't do it into the microphone, but pumping your arms, pumping your feet really quick, there's a breath that can keep you going, just like a boxer would. So you've got this sort of breath. And you know that if you can hear it like music and you can tune into it, it overrides the brain and stays very laser focused on the breathing, the pattern, which matches the movement. And you stay well away from any other thought pattern, including I'm running out of gas, my legs are hurting, all
my
this other stuff. Yeah, my toenails are missing. Don't worry about all that. You can just play the tune and ultra focus on the tune. If the tune slows down, the body's slowing down because the body's in line with the tune. Right. So if you've got your breathing in line with your movement, all you need to listen to is the pace of the breathing and you know your movement is on pace. Right. So if the breathing starts to slow down or you start to change the pattern because your mind has wandered, your pace is slowing down. Right. So when you're trying to maintain a cracking pace over a 20-kilometer endurance march or you're running from cone to cone or you're, you know, you're on a spin bike, it doesn't matter what it is. Continue to, you know, synchronize your breathing with your movement and listen to the breathing above everything else. To do that, you need to over-exaggerate the breath, right? So if you're super inhale, exhale, and you're not worried, you're not egotistic, you're not looking around going, shit, what are people thinking of me here? You can hear it louder than anything. You can hear it over your music and therefore you can maintain pace, maintain performance.
Well, they do say breath is life and it's everything, right? It doesn't matter what you're going through, whether you're, you know, in the special forces or you've got anxiety, you know, before a performance or something. So it is something we definitely need to work more on. And I know most people breathe in their chest and not in their belly. Like that's a simple thing.
Fully. And there's, you know, countless, I feel like there's countless ways to breathe, you know, just with nasal breathing, with mouth breathing, with into your chest, into your stomach, pace, power. Like there's so many ways to adopt to your body type as well because everyone's got different muscles and different strengths and finding that particular breath, whether it's all mouth or all nose with that pattern, once you find it though, it's a very powerful thing to train because that is, you know, directly connected to your mindset.
So you could say you are pretty lucky after some of the experiences you've had over in Afghanistan and some of the, you know, wounds that you potentially have experienced or not experienced. Do you think this is talking about, I know there's one moment that in my mind talking about how you were wounded in the face, if you want to share that story, do you think it's one of the reasons that you see life differently now or have you always been this way? Like it, from my understanding, you've always kind of had this in you, but when you experience things like you have, you come out and see the world very differently. So obviously that's going to help you see and manage life differently to others.
Definitely. You know, and talking about being wounded in action over there when we were ambushed, and I'll get into details, it was the amazing lesson that the military teaches you that you know, when your emotions are heightened and when you have a different chemical balance within your body, fall back to your basic training or the training, your training level, which has been rehearsed, practiced and conditioned, right? So at the highest level of excitement, right, and pumped full of adrenaline, your training hasn't been well rehearsed and practiced, that's when you can fall into an issue, right? But because we practiced so many times and you're drilled so many times and you're rehearsed so many times, and that's just what you do thousands and thousands of repetitions with your weapon, with communicating, with moving and knowing what you're looking for, when you find yourself in, you know, in a position where you've been ambushed and then you've taken on wounds and whatnot, your body and your mind still can drop back to a level of training where you can look and left and right, am I still in line with my guys? You know, what's my weapon? Have I got a stoppage? Can I continue? And that was the lesson out of that one in hindsight, but that's what I needed to get out of that position. So once you know that and you hit that position, it's easy to tell the story where, you know, what did you do when you were hit, for example? It was like exactly that. I went straight into my drills. And that's not an ego thing. That's not saying, oh, I'm super tough. It was like, that's what we're trained to do. You can't sit around and go, oh my God, I've been shot. Fuck, where did that come from? Dude, did you see that? Man, no, there's none of that. It's like, it's straight into it. Weapon drills, you know, looking side to side, teamwork, communication, move, shoot, where did that come from? You know, target identification. You just drop to your basic level of training. And in business now, it's been amazing to, you know, to see that people don't do that. People don't rehearse. They're so reactive and they're so singular in the way that they do stuff rather than finding the SOPs and practice, and then, you know, handing that over to a, you know, someone else in your business or doing it smoothly in your business and doing it well, right? So do you want me to get into the details?
Go
of the,
for it. We're all here for it.
right, so that was on my first tour. That was 2009. We were on foot and we were patrolling through a town, if you will, through an, you know, round an aqueduct. So this is like, you know, think of an Afghani situation. The mountains comes down into the what we call the green belt. You know, there's mud built buildings. There's, you know, waterways that they've dug in to channel the water. They've got crops next to it. And this, in this instance, it was like sort of dead or brown crop corn. So it was high corn. And our job in there, without getting into detail, was just to pretty much, you know, activate to see who was in there, you know, to stir the hornet's nest, if you will. We do that on purpose just because it you know, raises them above the threshold and we can target them beyond that. But this is day two, walked into the same position on purpose, well planned, and they'd set up an ambush. In this particular instance, they had us on enfilade, as they call it, which means they'd set up a machine gun at in front of us. So as we were walking in a line, as we do in a single line, if the machine gun was to open up fire, it would come along the line, right? It would shoot all the way down the line and collect a lot of us. And then they have usually a well set up ambush, would have someone on the side. So once that initial machine gun had fired, the guy on the side could then, you know, wipe across the rest of us. However, we were so close to this Taliban guy who was laying down with an AK-47 that he just started shooting. Right, so we nearly walked on him, probably only 15, 20 metres away tops. We were the lead team, and this guy opened up fire and shot Mark, shot our scout. He's totally fine. He was wounded in the legs, but that opened up and, you know, everyone did their drills essentially, moving left, right, off the line. I was the gunner and I was pretty much where I moved off the line. I collected that machine gun burst, which came second instead of first. So there was a PKM set up and that pretty much fired down. How it hit me, though, was as I was going down to ground, the machine gun, you know, burst hit my weapon, essentially. So instead of hitting me directly, it hit my weapon, which I was holding machine gun myself, and it broke into pieces, broke bits of the barrel off, you know, split down and whatnot. And that's what collected me, went through my ear, we went into my shoulder, into my face, and I received shrapnel wounds that looked worse than what they were.
And now you've got a special little treat in your cheekbone.
Yeah, I do. I can stick a magnet to it. It's pretty cool. And the only reason that that's still there is because, you know, they were just saying risking scarring if they were going to dig in there and have a go to dig it out. So it's in there still, which is cool.
Battle wounds
hanging around with me.
Love it.
Yeah.
So what do you think the greatest lesson has been for you coming from the military? You know, what's the gift that you can say learned the most or experienced or taken with after leaving?
Look, what I've worked the hardest on, I think, is just things true. And what I'm passionate about the most is just team cohesion and building teams post that, because you find yourself pretty alone when you get out. And I had a pretty hard journey you know, no boohoo moments here, but, you know, the commando unit hasn't been stood up for too long. Social media hasn't been around for too long. It was only starting to activate around that, 2012 sort of era. So sticking your head, as we call it, above the threshold is going against the grain or going against what we're used to. So as a commando or anyone in special forces, you've got a protected identity. So you don't say what you do. And if you do say what you do or whatever, it's not in detail. And then coming out of the military, you have to rebrand. You would know better than anyone. So you've got to go through branding, which is learning how to brand, because there's no transition course. There's no people in front of you that have come out of the special forces and branded themselves or taken on any sort of business on social media, right? So your resume, if it's even on your resume, is quite silent. Maybe it's underground, it's in a corporate job. It's, you know, what are you going to transition into? Because that's the other thing, you know, a lot of our skill sets that we're trained in don't have a home out here. Right. And then if it does, for example, as I told you, as a combat fitness leader inside of the military, didn't even recognize a Cert 3 and 4 when you got out of here. So you can go from a combat fitness, you can go from a combat fitness leader in a special forces unit to a no one in the fitness world out here. And you have to go through the teachings out here, which are completely reversed there, you know, it's just theory and a tiny bit of prac, where the military is all practical. Your practitioners with the theory on top. So anyway, it was a challenging thing to do, putting myself on social media, building the trust. That's what it's there for. You know, people want to train and know how, why am I going to train with you? If you're a trainer and you've got this education for me and you want to help me, cool. But what have you done? Why are you different to the next guy, right? Which is what social media is really good for, is just getting your brand out there. So that was a hard transition because it made a few enemies of the guys still back in the unit. But it's good. 8 years, 9 years down the track, it's completely reversed. You know, people are appreciative of that, and I'm able to help coach people from the military and from the unit, you know, reestablish their own brands and get out there and put themselves out on social media without being shot for it, right? So
a gift and lesson from the military.
His team, like I said, team cohesion, and I've been working my ass off through that challenging time just to try and connect the boys together to put myself into a position where I can help transition guys out of it, right? Provide the right education in resources or just in a friendly face to be like, dude, here's a route that you can take, or here's one not to take because of my failings or my challenges that you might not want to go through, right? So, you know, it's not my biggest lessons coming out of the military as far as strengths. I think the entire thing and experience, if you're looking back at it in hindsight, you can pick bits and pieces when you need them as weapons. But for me, it's still an ongoing journey of connecting everybody and getting everybody transitioned out in a positive way.
I love that. And it's something that's really powerful within you, is that teamwork, is that connecting, is relationships, is, yes, you're independent and very solo, but in a sense you need and want team around you.
Totally. And in that, if you wanted to pick a main word, it's leadership, right? You've got to have discipline. You've got to have leadership. You've got to have teamwork and put, you know, team first, not self. Attributes that you learn as a commander when you get to train them in really well, and that's what people want out here. And that's been part of my business, is working with, you know, high-end professional athletes, professional teams, CEOs who want and need those skill sets to up, you know, level up and to get further ahead. So that's been a big part of my business, is helping guys, you know, get some of those teachings that come from the military.
A question that you get asked often, and I'm sure people wonder, is the PTSD.
Yep.
Why do people experience that coming out of the army or the military?
Totally. And it comes in different forms, right? You know, like anything that's been given a label, a level of understanding is always needed. But I've explained to many people, you included, that for me it's the pace. It's the consistent pace of the military, the well-structured military, the ranking system, the way that we communicate around all of that, you know, and just how efficient it can be, both as an individual, as the team, as the entire corporation, the trust, the energy, all of that behind it is an immense pace, and it's a beast of a machine, which doesn't exist out here. So once you get out here, individuals are slow. They're thinking differently. They don't even know what you talk about when you say situation awareness.
Except
they're like,
for me.
They're like, what? What's that, right? What discipline? I understand the word, but how do I get it? There's just so many levels of misunderstanding. And pace change, that's the biggest thing, pace change. And then you come out of the military and you've still got that drive, you've still got the energy, and you've still got the purpose. And where do you put it? If you haven't got something to transition into and you've got all this drive, it's like a driver of anxiety. Or imagine just being wired and not being able to put it anywhere. So, you know, you want to calm down the edges a little bit. You know, you might have a drink. You might start going down that path. You might do drugs. You might do whatever it is just to calm the farm. Like, you're just like, dude, I've got all this energy and no one understands me. You know, I'm solo. I'm a nomad out here. Where are my tribe? Where's my tribe? You know, so there's not enough out of it yet. And like I said, special forces in Australia, especially with 2 Commando and guys transitioning out, hasn't been around long enough to establish, and we're quite slow to establish, a means of transitioning out with all the right communication and support to get guys on point straight away, right? And if we can do that properly, we can save a lot of guys.
It's a lot, right? Because, I mean, I watch you and my mind works really fast too, which is probably why we work well together. But I can imagine how hard it must be when you're so well trained and structured and routinal and like just even seeing and being a part of things that no one can really comprehend, and then coming back out here, it's like, oh,
totally. How strong is contrast, right? When you do something harder than most and you've just found your way into it, right? But then you come back to something that you used to find hard and you don't look at it as hard anymore because that other thing that was super hard has just blown that out of the water. Well, you do things in the military, you go through commando selection, you go through operations or whatever, and you hear people complain about what's being hard and you kind of go, no. But they don't know what they don't know. But do you have that compassion for the person, or do you just go, you know, this, that, and the other, and you want to vacate? So guys can get spiked really quickly just by being surrounded or in the environments that don't cater for what level they're on. They're on a different level, right?
Yeah, and I think something that has definitely come up for me in our relationship and being observational and a person that is always wanting to better myself and watching what I'm doing and how I'm thinking and behaving. I definitely, not that I'm someone that complains a lot about anything, but I definitely watch where the things that I'm about to say sometimes because I'm like, that is not even a thing, like, because I know what you've been through and what you've seen and experienced, and not that you lack compassion in any form, like you are so compassionate and kind, but it's just interesting watching things that I would normally maybe say, but I go, do you know what? I don't really need to say that because I know exactly what you're going to say.
That's been my entire being and entire business, is to provide, right, those situations and platforms to give guys the contrast. Okay, this is what you feel is your perceived limitations. Let me show you and take you into another position where you can factually see that, hey, you're completely wrong, right? That's not hard. This is hard, right? Sure, people don't opt to do that all the time, but there's so many different ways where you can provide the contrast, even through storytelling. You know, I can tell stories of our events, which you can vibe with. Like, if you come to a 6-hour event, just 6 hours, you're not being fed. There's no food there. You're under the pump the entire time. It's a snapshot of commando selection. So it's in a controlled environment, yes, but it's very fast and hard and whatever. And our goal is to, you know, use psychological warfare on you, but using...
You don't do this to me every day, do you?
No, it's very physical, right? But you can imagine, you know, coming up to the end of it, and we don't tell them where the end of it is, but they're down and out, right? They've told themselves, man, I'm checking out. I've reached that point. This is it. And they don't know that just up the road, you know, it's done, until they figure out, you know, geographically that they're nearly home, right? And then they come alive. Oh, my God, I've got 100 meters. Or we strategically yell it out. You have 100 meters to go until we're back to base, right? And then what? What do? They perk up.
And that means it's always in them, right?
It's always in them. It's always been there. So they believed their own crap back there on the beach, a K away from the HQ. Now they're 100 meters, they're good to go. Not only that, they get back to the driveway and we make them do 100 burpees, right? 100 burpees, where normally people would be like, no thanks, like in general, not to mention that it's the end of a 6-hour event that we've run them through or whatever. And you know what? They're hungry to get it done, because all we had to do was simply say, hey, this is the last exercise you're going to do for the day. You think they attack those 10 sets of 10 to make 100 burpees? They annihilate them. Right. And even through that story, just telling you, you know, you have more in you, but acknowledging that, bringing the awareness around that, or having the contrast through experience, people just don't get it.
Why is that though? Like, why do people, is it just through lack of life experience or?
There's not enough platforms out there, which is why I've been so hungry and busy for the last 10 years building them, is like, okay, cool. Well, I experienced these things factually. I came in with no qualifications as a commander when I left with everything, land, sea, air, weapons, explosives, you know what I mean? Like, what else? First aid. And the list goes on and on and on, right? But you, at the beginning, you don't have those. But at the end, you kind of go, what can't we do? This is crazy. Like, you know, the military has a very good way of teaching people. Like, in this lesson, you'll learn. By the end of this lesson, you'll be able to watch now for a full demonstration. Like, the way that they teach you, you can absorb it and then do it, and then you test and you condition and you rehearse and you rehearse and you rehearse until you're really good at it.
So then life is just too cushiony for people.
It's too cushiony.
Right?
Yeah. Too cushiony.
There's no
opportunity to do
these things.
I don't think so. I don't think so. And there's not enough platforms a lot of the time, or maybe purpose to do those platforms, even if they are out there. Like, why? Why do I want that? Mm-hmm. Or is it too hard? Do I want to stay comfortable? Is my life good enough anyway? You know, there's all of this sort of internal dialogue. There's a lot to it, which is why when I work with a client one-on-one or I work with a group, the first part of it's all just rewiring, right? It's self-awareness of how we've been thinking, you know, how we've been talking to ourselves for so long, what we actually believe, where our belief systems are. There's a whole process of kind of unpacking ourselves and then putting it back together as a new version. We can really take the old version of you out the back and shoot it and then bring a new one forward and be like, no, Rebecca's dead. Beck is here, right? Beck is here to dominate. Beck eats this. She doesn't eat that. She's like a car, right? You don't give, you know, something that takes diesel petrol. It just doesn't happen, right?
I did that once in England.
Of course you did.
That's a story.
That's a story we can unpack later. But it's a rewiring process. People just don't know what they don't know. Maybe they're not encouraged, or maybe they don't know how powerful it can be, even as a corporate person, to come out and do something physically demanding, but then taking that brain, you've only got one brain, that experience into your workplace has a huge impact. Huge impact on what you find hard, or if a challenge comes up, even if it's a pile of paperwork, you're just like, bring it on, right? Like, a new attitude is energy. So, you know, it's my job to get it out there.
So let's say someone's looking to better their mindset and they're not able to work with you one-on-one just now. What can they do? Where do they start? How do, because, you know, studying NLP and working with clients one-on-one, definitely obsessed with human behavior and how the mind works and how people have these stories on repeat. And, you know, I'll put my hand up. I definitely have my own versions. So how does someone, or what can someone do, that, what's a little tip that you can give someone that wants to start to rewire or change?
Definitely. I think the rewiring process can start with an attitude change. And, you know, an attitude change can come from, you know, visual and audible things out there. So these days you don't have to go past your phone, past your computer to be able to start a different attitude. But what it takes is the self-awareness first to own that you could have a better attitude. Oh, okay, I could have a better attitude. Cool, I'm a student. Where is the better attitude? How? What can I turn on to get it? Then you go looking. You find those things and you start to play them and you go, oh, now adopting a better attitude. If you don't have that awareness, ownership at the beginning to say, or need, or want, and purpose, like us, we're obsessed with bettering ourselves, right? But if you don't want to better yourself and you have an attitude or an ego around staying still, then you're never going to take the step-by-step process to do that. But that's where the rewiring starts, right? Is you can adopt an attitude or a process from someone else just by watching and listening. But then you have to do the most important.
Implementation,
action, right? You have to do it. And there's many ways that you can do it. We talk about discipline, doing things you don't want to do when you don't want to do them, right? Same thing, push-ups, cold showers. There's a million things. There's actually 5-10 things that we can do in the morning process in the first 30 minutes. Do I want to do them every day? No, I kind of do. But
I was about to say, you're lying.
But most people don't.
Yeah,
most people don't. But you do them and you do them and
they
you do them
feel
and do
great,
them.
But it's... Well, they do feel great in some ways, but I mean the cold shower thing, like I definitely struggle with that and I have to breathe through that and I have to talk myself through that. But there's a desire to get to the other side of what that is.
Right.
And so some people just like that part.
But yeah, and your logical brain also knows how good you feel at the end of it.
Oh, 100%.
Right, so all you do is you remind yourself before you get in of how good it felt after it yesterday morning, how refreshing it felt to put on the clothes after a cold shower and get into the day. You go, yeah, I really do want that more than I want to avoid it. Because you know? Like anything, you practice. If you practice avoiding it, you'll just get really good at avoiding everything.
Well, that's it. How you do one thing is how you do everything, right?
Right, the weapon you're picking up. So the weapon I'm picking up isn't push-ups and, you know, cold water therapy. Sure, the weapon I'm picking up is discipline. And I'm firing and I'm firing and I'm firing and firing just to get as much repetition on that thing as I can, which is discipline, right? Even in training, you know, you can stick to a 2-breath or 3-breath rest. Meaning like if we're just sprinting on the spot and I said, you know, sprint as hard as you can or box that bag as hard as you can. When you really reach that threshold, that peak where you feel step back, 1 breath, 2 breath, and then you're into it again, right? And you can practice the entire workout with different movements and different paces. You're only allowed 2 breaths as a rest and use it as a potent, you know, action-taking thing. That's practicing discipline. Discipline was two breaths max, not 3, not 5, not 30 seconds, not 60 seconds, not laying on floor, 2-breath rest back into the movement. And that is discipline, the weapon I chose to pick up before the workout started.
Yeah, I did an episode, a solo episode on self-discipline and teaching that because I think it's one of our greatest tools or greatest things we can use to achieve so many different things in life.
Totally.
You know, we're so blessed to have access to YouTube and podcasts and so much information that we have no excuse, really. You know, you can't use finances as an excuse. Oh, I can't afford to work with Scott, you know, like, so I can't do this. So go elsewhere, go discovering different things that you can build a new mindset.
Totally. But anyone that gets in contact with me, which is a big point of difference with a lot of people, is right, the willingness to serve, you know. I'm passionate about serving. I love helping people. So reaching out to people and giving them the list of my morning routine action items, things that I do when I get stressed around breathing patterns, give that to them. They just need to get in contact.
Yeah, that is pretty generous with his time. I'm going to ask you one more question as we close out. What is your daily non-negotiables?
Oh, you've seen a few, right, in the morning, and I actually write that on there, don't I, when I do the push-ups, things like that. Acts of service, you know, complimenting someone on something that they're wearing or something that they're doing, as many people as possible. Because when you
spoke about this today,
we did. When you look at someone up and down, or you meet someone for the first time, and you know, in an optimistic mind and a positive mind, you're looking for something positive out of them. You're completely reverse to the people that we don't like. You're not looking for negativity. I'm not looking to judge you. I'm looking for the opposite. Man, what are you? Oh, dude, those shoes. I'm a fan of fashion, of course. So naturally, I'm going to pick up on something that you're wearing. But there's also elements of people that you're just like, dude, your energy's awesome. You know what I mean? Like, give them something, and that's a non-negotiable for me. I have to have that in my daily thing. So lucky you, because I'll be doing that. Stop. But but otherwise, you can do that with every stranger you run into, and it's impossible to leave, you know, not in a positive mindset after a contact like that with someone. So
I think it's so important, as we were saying today when we were talking about this. There's this look in someone's face when you compliment them. It's like they haven't received one for so long, or they appreciate what you've said so much. And it's not about, and I pride myself in this as well, not surprising because we're the same person pretty much. But it's like, how can I look for something to compliment someone every day and genuinely mean it? It's not about making it up. Like, it's looking at someone and pointing out their, like you said, positive trait or something that they have, because so many people lack that appreciation and positivity in their world. And I think it can make such a great difference in their life for the rest of the day.
Totally. And it's not a soft and gushy thing to say. I genuinely want the best chemicals in my body for optimal performance. When I go into the gym, I don't want to have stress. I don't want to have cortisol and anxiety and all these other things that it's going to create in my body. So the number one combat against that is to put the good vibes into me, is to put the positive. I can do that just by saying thank you. I just say thank you. My shit's changed immediately, right? I can go and give someone a compliment. I can do all of these positive things, not to be soft, not to be like whatever. It's and not to sound good on a podcast. It's because chemically doing me a favor. And then when I need it the most, I'm at my highest performing.
Gratitude.
Just live it.
Powerful emotion, as they all say.
Live it, you know, and it's a weapon I'm really good at firing.
Very good. So I could ask you 1,000 more questions, but.
Please do.
We're going to stop at this point. And I'd like to ask you if there's anything else that you'd like to leave us with today, Scotty.
It's a question to them that I won't be able to hear the answer to, but. What are you doing today after pressing stop on this podcast to better yourself? What's the first action you're going to take? I'll ask you that question. What are you going to do?
Well, I'm pretty proud that we trained this morning. So I'm excited. I've got a lot of work to do this afternoon, but releasing this podcast, one of those things.
Absolutely. And the momentum behind session, if you want to call it a session one for those who go and do session one, right, follow it up with session two. It's got to have a session three and a session four. It's got to have its buddies there to make a team.
I love that. I think the thing I think we were speaking about this the other day, it's that you know, if you don't really feel like it, whether it's in business, whether it's in the gym, just do 10 minutes. And if you still don't feel like it after 10 minutes, quit if that's what you want to do. But guess what happens usually after the 10 minutes? Fucking pumped. And you want to keep working. You want to keep training. You want to keep doing the thing.
Totally. So that's a weapon in your armory, right? That's a tactic, and that's what you have to remind yourself of, even if you write them down, right? One of your tactics, one of your weapons that you can pull off that you've been firing for a long time is start on something slow and low tempo. Warm up, because by chance you're going to hit the song that you like, you're going to get the sweat on the brow, and then that, oh, I'm just going to go and spin my leg session turns into, I saw you today, grabbing heavy things and lifting heavy things and doing things when you're supposed to be doing something else. So, yeah, it's a good weapon that you've got, right? And people, if they don't have the awareness and put those in words or in pictures in front of them all the time, then they're just, they're going to be reactive instead of proactive on the attack.
Yeah, and it's just starting somewhere, really, because one of the greatest things I see with my clients, and this is more so business these days, but it's not knowing where to start, not have, you know, being overwhelmed with wanting to achieve so many things, is just pick one thing and get started.
Totally.
Simple, take action.
Totally. And gamifying it, that's probably a good thing I like to end on as well. If you can gamify it and say, you know, how many am I trying to achieve? Challenge yourself. We love challenges. We love progressive, like ticking it off and measurable things, right? So cool, I'm going to get 30 sessions in a row. That's all I want to do, is just get 30 sessions in a row, whether that's one a day or whatever it is. It's just, you know, I have to get it done. And if you have that challenge around yourself and you tell some people and make some accountability, there's a game that you've created around it and you can get shit done.
Awesome. So where can people come and chat with you online or hang out or work with you?
So across social media, it's just at Scott Evanett. It's the same on Instagram and Facebook. You know, there's a few videos and whatnot on YouTube and evanett.com.au.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being on my show, and I am so excited for our
future.
Yeah. Many more episodes to come.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, wasn't that an amazing episode? I hope you enjoyed listening to us chat back and forwards. I know there's going to be many more in the future. Different style, not so much interview, just us having a good old chat and teaching you guys some of our favorite tips around life, business, mindset, and all of the things. Please do share this online if you share it and tag Rebecca Neal the podcast, or I am Rebecca Neal. And don't forget to check out Scott online as well. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.